Big news! Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. It's Black Friday in July. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Get our lowest prices of the summer for 5 days only. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals with fast and free shipping site-wide. So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off now through July 28th.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. Plus, fast and free shipping site-wide. Shop now through July 28th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
Yes, Dateline dropped their bombshell reporting just the other night with brand new information on the Brian Koberger case. More information that, incidentally, does not point to him not being the killer. Of course, he's innocent till proven guilty, but there's more that does not look all that good. Joining me to discuss, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. Jen, I know you watched it as well, and it was fascinating. There was a lot of stuff in there that we had seen before, but they certainly got some new pieces and pieces I think a lot of us have been wondering about for quite some time. What were some of the things that stood out to you in that Dateline report?
Well, I think from a truly sort of graphic and horrific and grab you from, you know, the point of view that this isn't a movie. This isn't Scream. This isn't Friday the 13th. This is real. When they discussed Ethan Chapin's legs being carved into, that for me, I know that seems like a small detail, but it was actually a huge detail for me because of the loathing and the hate and the just everything that came out with that action.
Yeah.
And knowing that the Chapins have known about that all this time, how difficult it must be for the family. So that jumped out at me, Tony, and many other things, but that one was the real one that got me.
I mean, and it plays, if we're understanding Brian Koberger to be the person that I think a lot of us suspect he is, having the issues with women, the jealousy of others that are getting these women and he's not. If that's his thing with this, carving into Ethan's leg, I mean, I hate getting gross because it's just, ugh. But I mean, it's a piece of the case. I mean, what does that tell you about his mindset? The fact that he went to that degree in, whoever did this went to that degree in the process of murdering these people. It's unneeded. It's unnecessary. It's not one of the things you need to do to just kill the person. That's passion. That's some sort of hate or something.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And really, we found out also that it would seem he was sound asleep, you know, drinking all night. It was 2 a.m. They'd been at this big fraternity party. And he slit his artery, right?
Yeah.
Carotid, I would believe. So there was no need. This wasn't about incapacitating him so he couldn't run or anything like that. And I'm not even sure he needed to kill him, Tony.
No.
You know, at that point, Zan is dead and he could have left. But no, he not only felt the need to kill him, he felt the need to mutilate him. And I think that just shows the mindset of the torment, the hate of looking at somebody like Ethan and saying, you are everything I could never be.
Yeah. I mean, I want to shiver when I think about that because it's so creepy and it's so, so dark. There was a lot in this and there were some big pieces. I want to talk about another piece that stood out to me that I don't think got a ton of attention, at least as the Twitter sphere with everybody talking about this. The phone call to the parents the next morning. Brian calling mom and dad. Oh, to be a fly on the wall to hear that phone call. I mean, I'm not thinking he's like, hey, mom, dad, guess what? I just slaughtered four college kids. But I really wonder what the hell that conversation was about, because it lasted a good deal of time. What are they talking about there? Like, hey, you having pancakes this morning? Oh, yeah. I got some Mrs. Butterworth on here today. I mean, what do you think that conversation was?
Well, and conversations that I believe there were two, if I recall correctly, one lasting 30 minutes, one lasting 50 minutes.
Yeah.
So as you said, these are extended conversations. And really, right after the murders, when I think about this case, Tony, I think of someone that had such built up rage and anger and hate for so many. We actually got to see and read Koberger talk about his rage mm-hmm. toward his father, yeah. how poorly he treated him and what a terrible person he was. And to me, this event would have been so cathartic for him, where he said, I'm cleansed. I'm cleansed now. I'm whole. I'm worthwhile. Look at what I've done. Look at how I conquered this. And I think that he called his parents probably in a great mood, just like we see in that selfie, and probably maybe even apologizing for recent past actions of not being very nice. And just, I would love to see, when was the last time he even called his parents? When the last time was he had a long conversation? Dollars to donuts, he didn't call him often.
I'm going to guess that too. And especially at that hour of the morning. It's a weird time to be calling mom and dad, unless mom and dad get up that early and you do too, and this is a normal call time. Maybe it is, but I would love to see if that's a pattern or if that's a really big one-off, and I want to know what happened. I mean, the parents, they could be called as witnesses here, so we may end up hearing about what that conversation was like once this trial takes place, could we not?
Well, they need to be called as witnesses. There's so much, I think, that they could testify about. I mean, we have everything from the K-bar knife. Mm-hmm. They need to be asked, did you order that? Was it your, did you ever use Koberger's computer? Because I think forensically they're going to show, we've seen it in the court documents, that it's his keystrokes on his computer. Mm-hmm. But they're going to have to completely exclude that anybody else in that family used his computer to take that K-bar knife, and they're going to want somebody or everyone in the family really to say, it wasn't me, I didn't do it. And if they know Brian ordered it, mm-hmm. we need that testimony. We have the ride back. How did that happen? Yeah. I think it's very interesting that when he went to college, at least my understanding is, he went by himself. Mm-hmm. So why did he want Pops to come drive back with him? And what all was discussed? Was anything hidden on that drive? Remember, they took that circuitous route.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's true. It was a bizarre route. It was not necessary. They went like an extra. I used to know the number, but it's several hours out of the way to get to where they're going in Pennsylvania, which didn't make a whole lot of sense. But yeah, I wonder if, and I don't think the dad was aware if he did get rid of something along the way, but I could totally see it where Koberger was waiting to dispose of something along that route versus the route that went kind of around and out of town a little bit that he took the next morning, which I think is another possible place where the knife could end up being. I know there's actually a search party being put together to look for it now. But yeah, I think there's a lot of possibilities there. The conversation is what would be the most telling. And I really wonder what that was like for the dad and for mom, the sister. I mean, the fact that this family eventually goes out to his car in Pennsylvania and looks into it because they're that curious about, well, could it be him? That says a lot that family is thinking that's a plausible possibility. I think most parents would be writing that, of course, that's impossible. It can't be my son. They thought it was. So they knew a bit more about Brian than, of course, everyone else did. They're the family. But what is it that they knew? What pieces of his personality made them think, yeah, he could possibly be the guy?
Well, issues and issues of raising this kid.
Yeah.
And, what he wrote in his own words and them knowing about that. And this was a kid that struggled in every way, shape, or form with weight, with heroin usage, with mm-hmm. Being bullied, just having a, a really tough life. Believe me, I'm not feeling sorry for him. A lot of people have a tough life and they don't massacre other people when they feel like they want to. So I'm just saying, I don't think it was a stretch for them. And then how about the fact you have, you know, him going out and putting biological material in a plastic containers and throwing it away in somebody else's garbage, you know?
Yeah.
There were a lot of indicators.
Wearing gloves and it was not the the typical family get together, and it was not COVID time anymore either. So he can't use the argument, I'm being really careful at wearing gloves, you know, like some people were doing at that point where they're wearing hazmat suits into the Piggly Wiggly. There was other big pieces here too. The first time we got a chance to see the white Elantra in high definition. And I mean, if you watch it frame by frame, you can certainly see it in a lot greater detail, the way that it was presented. The way of driving, the way he was circling in at first, a little calm, the exit is what got me. After the murders, that car leaving, that was a determined drive to get the hell out of there.
Yeah, you pegged it. I mean, we've seen a lot of different footage on social media, but this was confirmed footage from that Ring camera across the way that made it very clear this vehicle. And not only that it came there, but it came there numerous times that morning and then 23 times. Mm-hmm. Now, remember in the affidavit, it was a dozen. Now we're up to 23. Again, not to confuse stalking with surveilling, in my opinion, this was him surveilling that house, understanding where his points of entry and exit would be, learning where the kids might have gone in and out, what their hours were. He was working just like BTK did. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and with that, obviously for a while, Brian Koberger was studying under Dr. Catherine Ramsland, and Howard Bloom had some reporting about that just the other day, and Catherine has responded to that reporting. I know she responded to Brian Enten, and we reported on that the other day. She also responded to us, and I noticed this yesterday, like 4 days after she sent it to me, because I don't check Facebook messages all that often. And here's what she had to say about the Howard Bloom reporting. The reporting basically stating that he believed that Koberger may have been doing this to kind of show off to Catherine. Now, that part is not necessarily being disputed. The part that's being disputed is about Catherine's interaction with Koberger before and after the crimes. I just want to read what she sent to us. I heard your podcast. I have recently made a statement in response to Bloom's allegations because it's not about Koberger, it's about me. I had no email correspondence with Brian Koberger while he was at WSU. He has not been in touch with us, with me, since his arrest. I called his parents as a gesture of kindness, but I do not advise them about the case. I did not call them hours after the arrest, as Bloom claims. I have never talked to his sister about any book. I did not broker anything regarding a lawyer. I have not been invited by the Kobergers to Idaho. I don't know where they'll be staying. I don't know who Bloom's source is or why he reports information for which he has no proof. And Howard has replied as well on his Twitter, kind of walking some of that back to saying it's a hypothesis. But that's Catherine's response to all of that. If we're just going back to the hypothesis, take all of the pieces of the reporting of her communication out of this, because she says she didn't have it. The idea that Koberger might have been doing this, and maybe part of the motive was to still be the smartest person in the room. I don't know it was a connection of romance or like, I want to do this for a woman, as we would have seen with like the Reagan attempted assassination. But I think it was more what Howard is saying. It was, you know, look how smart I am too, Catherine. Look, I'm just as smart. I did one better. I didn't just interview the killer like she did with BTK. I became the killer. Not that he would say this and she'd go, oh, good job, Brian. Well, I'm so glad you've took everything I said to heart. Not at all. But I think it'd be a quiet thing that he would get, where he would get his, in the words of Karen Reed, ego bath, because other people would be talking and teaching about this perfect killing that they never found the guy for. But they eventually obviously did. What do you think about that element of his reporting?
I, you know, I'm not really buying it. I think that the rage and anger and everything that built up that would lead you to the point of massacring these kids so far outweighed some sort of, see, I want to show you how great I am.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't think that that was what was flowing through his brain at the time. Could it have been an ancillary, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to be as great as BTK and Bundy in his mind in terms yeah. of what he accomplished in this murder and what I think could have been preparation for more? I think it could have been an ancillary thought, but to somehow leap to, I'm doing this for my teach.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, that's yeah. just, I'm just not buying it. There's just way too much passion and hate and anger in this thing.
It is. I mean, it kind of plays into the whole time I've been saying, I feel like he's incel-y, but I feel like this was more of to have the experience to do this than it was for anything else. So he could go back and so he could bask in the coverage of this thing and really feel something like he made some sort of difference. That's why I felt like his reporting, his hypothesis, I didn't feel like it was that far off the mark as being a possibility here. I'd love to know where he's getting this, or if it is just that, if it's all just kind of his own hypothesis. His reporting's usually pretty good and it usually does pan out. But it's interesting now to see the both sides of this from Catherine's point of view and from Howard's. Catherine being called as a witness possibly in this, do you think that that could be a possibility? Just considering, you know, she was his teacher. There'd be some observations there on behavior. Not that she was communicating. She's clearly said that she was not. But observations of how he handled the material that was being put out there in relation to what he's alleged to have done. What are your thoughts?
I think the biggest, thing about this, in other words, the biggest thing that gives some credence to what Bloom said in terms of there being some communication between them, even though she's come out and said, no way.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants to make that very clear.
Yeah.
Why is she being called? Because just how he would have acted in class or, you know, communications she might have had with him,
yeah.
that could be interesting to the FBI and could, you know, speak to motive and things possibly. Mm-hmm. But does she know so much more than we think she knows?
Mm-hmm.
And is that why the government is calling her? Because they've interviewed her and they know there's more.
I don't know. I mean, I do in no way, shape, or form do I think she knew anything about the crime, like he was going to do anything. But just behavioral observations of him before the crime while he was a student. You know, did he stand out more than others in terms of interest in specific areas that maybe were kind of odd, that maybe others didn't necessarily naturally gravitate to in terms of interest and passion? We know the questions he put out there and the DeSales project he was doing, it was all very, very much focused on your emotions, how you felt during the crime, how you felt after the crime, all these things seeming to try to learn to identify who or what he should feel while doing something like this. And it's not the first time he's recognized he doesn't have feelings or doesn't have emotions or empathy. And this quest to seemingly find it. I would be so curious to hear her observations of the time of having him as a student.
Yeah, I would be curious. And I think we're going to hear about that because I think she's writing a book. But my question would be, is there more in terms of any correspondence he might have had with her, not that she had with him, mm-hmm. or anything along that line?
Yeah.
And I always wondered if that's where Bloom kind of catapulted this from, seeing her on that witness list, because I'm not sure that just her observations of him all those years ago, mm-hmm. I'm not sure they'd be able to get that in. I guess it depends what she says, but would there be papers? Remember, we saw the paper that mm-hmm. I find most interesting on how to conduct a crime scene investigation.
Yeah.
That came out and mm-hmm. that was so interesting. Did he do any papers for her that, you know, focused in on some area of import here?
Yeah.
I'll be interested to see how it plays out and if she's even called.
Yeah, I would be very much too. But that was her response to that, so we know where she stands. The search history, another thing that we learned about, which we've all been wondering and kind of thinking, oh, this will be good. It is. It's good. It's, I mean, not good in a good way, but it's has a lot of in it that doesn't, that seems to play along with the Koberger mindset, allegedly. Drugged, passed out, Ted Bundy, those are just some of the things, and intermingled with porn. One could say, is this weird? He's a 20-something college guy, and he's looking up weird porn. I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends what you're into. That's pretty sick stuff, and certainly does go along with, you know, this whole thing. Obviously, there wasn't an SA that took place in the house with the murders, but clearly this did seem to target someone that there seemed to be some sort of sexual attraction to, or that whole incel type thinking with the people that he targeted. Do you think that that has any legs to it?
Oh, I think it has legs. Of course, the defense will easily be able to divert that search history, saying, mm-hmm. listen, he was getting a PhD in criminology. And I got to tell you, Tony, I think if anyone looked at your phone and my phone, what in the hell?
Yeah.
Because of everything we search yeah. and look at in preparation for our shows
yeah.
And so on. So, but this is the difference. We're not on trial for massacring for people.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of taking the totality of everything that has happened and then looking at his search history, it really puts a view on it that, geez, he was looking at porn with somebody that was passed out, drugged or otherwise unconscious, and who did he choose to attack?
Yeah.
Exactly that. And I think a jury will be able to easily make that roadmap stick.
It's a weird, I don't want to like dive into it too much, but do you think the intent was to take this to an SA when he was there and it all fell apart because he wasn't expecting all the people there?
1,000%. Yeah. This was 1,000%, in my opinion, all about gratification.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think Kaylee being in bed with her completely ruined all of his plans in that area. Thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God. And then not thank God, right? Because mm-hmm. of poor Kaylee. But I just mean, yeah, it changed and diverted his plan, I think.
Yeah. 23 times pinging near that house before the killings. Do you think he planned it for that night? Do you think it was, okay, tonight's the night, I'm going to get there and this is going down? Or do you think it could have been one of any of the many, many times he circled that house and this just happened to have been the night that he got his courage up to go in and do what he allegedly did?
I think he had planned this and thought about this for so long, at least 8 months, right? That yeah. was when the K-Bar was originally purchased. And I think he's thought about it well before that. Mm-hmm. And finally, Tony, he had the courage. Finally, that impulse control took off and he was able to get the courage to go in and do this. But I think he was obviously very well prepared. Look at how he was dressed. He was mm-hmm. able to somehow defrock all of that clothing. You know, this was very well planned. And but for Zanna being up on her phone, yeah. TikTok, I believe it was, Instagramming,
yeah,
and coming up those steps and her really derailing his plans to make his escape, you know, maybe he wouldn't have dropped that knife sheath, right? Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't seem like genius planning in terms of knowing who's in the house and what you're walking into. It seems like he really rolled the dice there. Like, maybe there'll be people here, maybe they won't. I don't know if he's had blinders on thinking there can't be anybody else in this house. I don't know why you would think that, but I don't know. Maybe it just had to be a roll of the dice because you really didn't know who or what was in that house at any given time with the amount of people. And his impulse just took over.
He knew. I mean, there was a DoorDash delivery that he saw. He waited for that guy to leave. He yeah. knew somebody was up. I think this is part of the excitement
yeah.
of being able to control that situation, being smarter than everybody. And it really is just like Bundy's situation, which he had searched mm-hmm. and knew about at the Chi Omega house.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly, you know, thinking no matter what, who was awake, what the obstacle was, he was going to conquer that situation. And I think it was exciting for him.
It's messed up when you, especially when you put everything together, the phone calls, the picture after, and everything that we know. There's this is only, we only know a fraction. There's so much more, I think, that'll be coming out in court because so much has been under seal. And who knows? August, it's not far away, but it's far away. And there's a lot that I'm guessing will be dropping between now and then. Wondering still if he's going to plead out if the cards get too tough against him. Do you think anything would put him over that line to try and do that?
No way.
No.
He's eaten this up. He's not going to plea. He knows that even if he does get a death sentence 20 years from now, when it's the time, who knows what will happen?
Yeah.
I mean, look at Manson.
Yeah.
Look at all of that, you know, band of murdering, you know, heathens. They were sentenced to death, and then their sentences were all commuted. And so he knows how long this process takes, and I think he's going to stick with it. This is part of him being famous.
It's part of the ride, and I think he's enjoying the ride in whatever way he's enjoying the ride.
Want true crime coverage all day, every day? Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today and get the latest cases delivered right to your feed.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.